Hi, everyone, and welcome to the special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and Freedom from Addiction, Truth Just Below the Surface on Libsyn and all syndicated channels and also on all of my platforms. And I'm excited to welcome the program my co-host, Reverend Wynn Henderson, MD. Wynn, how are you? And our topic today is going to be preparing ourselves before a vaccine comes. How can we, with COVID-19, till that vaccine comes, what measures should we take?
Well, it's nice to be on the program with you again today, Neil. And as you know, but some of my listeners might not, this show has my sincerest desire for you to get something from it that will make your life richer, fuller, and in this time of corona pandemic, safer. I'm Reverend Wynn Henderson. As an ordained Christian minister and a retired medical doctor, I have a dual perspective to bring you content to solve problems in your life. Freedom from Addiction, Share Your Mission is the longest running single hosted and produced spiritually based radio internet talk show in the country. We've been continuously running for over 20 years. And in this program, we talk about addiction in its 30 different forms, your mission in life, and as an investigative journalist, truth just below the surface. So today we're going to go back to one of our previous guests, and this is the fourth podcast in a series with him. And that would be Dr. Mark Hayden, MD, from the University of Alabama. And we discussed various things that have to do with COVID-19 previously. Today, in this podcast, we're going to discuss surface IgA and what to do prior to a vaccination being ready for the public. Mark, it's nice to have you on the program today.
It's wonderful to be here.
Okay, so we covered a lot of things in the first three podcasts. And I would invite our listeners to go to the link for that podcast. And that would be www.freedomfromaddiction.libsyn.com. Spell Libsyn, L-I-B as in boy, S-Y-N, all lowercase, no spaces. And that will take you to this particular program. But you can scroll down and hear the first three interviews with Dr. Hayden. So let's get going on this program, Mark. Would you tell our listeners about IgA and IgG and what they tell you and what they can't tell you and some of the basics?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Well, originally we had what was called an antibody test, and that appeared relatively early in February. That antibody test was initially a blood test, and that's the only test we have in the U.S. for most of the public, is a blood antibody test. The blood antibody test doesn't tell you about the antibodies that are on the surface of your lung air sacs. And that antibody that protects your lungs is called IgA. Unfortunately, people can have IgA that protects their lungs, and it won't show up on their blood test. So we don't have a way of telling who's actually immune and who's not immune, because most of these people have, a lot of people, millions of them and millions, have mucosal IgA that protects their lungs. And it's not, and that test is not available in the communities.
So what do the tests that they might run on you tell you that's important, if anything?
If you ask your doctor for let's say you had a really bad case of COVID and you were hospitalized and you spent a week in the ICU, your body would have so much antibodies that you would actually have bloodstream antibodies about 2 weeks later in most cases. Now, in some cases, people can be hospitalized with COVID and they still won't have the bloodstream IgG and IgA that appear about 2 weeks later. So the antibody test that you draw that's available in the U.S. is just not sensitive. It's picking up anywhere from 10% to maybe 30% of the cases.
Okay, Mark, why is surface IgA important?
If you look at COVID as a disease, it's really a scenario. And that's a strange name to apply to a disease. But the COVID, when you inhale it, it actually grows. It actually, the only COVID that bothers you is the SARS COVID virus that reaches your deep lungs. And it sits there in your deep lungs and grows for about a week in your air sacs or 2 weeks. And it grows from just a few, maybe a dozen or two dozen into literally millions, tens of millions, maybe even billions of viruses. Then later, 2-3 weeks later, after growing for weeks and weeks, your body recognizes it and has this big autoimmune reaction against your lungs. And that autoimmune reaction produces all the illness.
And is that what has been called cytokine storm?
Well, you know, the issue of cytokines was raised a lot, and that's not real clear about what the cytokine level is. What is clear is that when your immune system recognizes it later, usually because it has reached the intestinal tract and been processed and your body becomes aware of it, if you got billions of viruses there in your lungs, your body kind of freaks out and attacks your own lungs. That means that one of the most effective drugs out there has been dexamethasone, which is an anti-inflammatory. So it's really a lung inflammation caused when your body wakes up to the days and weeks that COVID has grown in your lungs, and now there's billions of them. So those are the people who get into trouble.
So here's the thought I have is, why do we want to know if we're immune or not, if we've had the virus or not, especially when we can't run away from this right now. Dr. Stephen, there's no way of running away from this. And
that's exactly
whoever,
right.
Whoever wins the election and their decision process moving forward with COVID-19, I think the therapeutics are more important than a vaccine, in my opinion. And I think that, you know, if it's not death, everyone gets the flu. I mean, we all get the flu. If we get it, if we can get it down to the death rate of the flu, then I don't think we should be so alarmed as everything else till we get a vaccine. And is everyone in this country going to take a vaccine? Absolutely not. So it's not going to be effective anyways.
That's right. You got that right. And the truth is, if we had a mucosal IgA test where you could test the level of IgA on the surface of your nose or on the surface of your mouth, we could actually tell the people who have immunity. That's the mucosal IgA test is really only available at a very few research centers. So that puts us unable to tell how much exposure people have had and who's immune and who's not immune. Now, you brought up something very fascinating, and that is, if the fatality rate is as low as the flu, then why are we so worried about it? And actually, you're right. Right now, people who work in healthcare environments who have already had a lot of exposure, those people are very likely to have IgA. So a lot of the people now who are wearing heavy personal protective equipment in high exposure environments,
Right. Those
people are already immune. And so there's a large number of the population that already have immunity. And the actual case fatality rate, if you included cases where they have mucosal IgA, the fatality rate would probably be about like the flu or lower. especially for those less than 65 or 70 years old?
Well, there's no test to let you know whether or not you have them.
There just isn't. We don't have a clinical test to show who's been exposed. That's pretty much the test. But you can, here's what you can look at with confidence. Look at Switzerland. Switzerland had a second wave of cases, and people talk about, hey, guess what? There's a second wave. In Switzerland, second wave of cases, and by cases, they're meaning people that are positive with the PCR in their mouth or the rapid test. In their cases, the death rate is 95% lower based on the case fatality rate to the number of cases. So their case fatality rate in Sweden had been over 100 at the peak. This second peak in Sweden has the same number of cases per day, hit the same high. But guess what? The case fatality rate ain't over 100. It's just like an average of 2 or 3 a day. So it's about 1/30. So in Sweden, when it blew through the first time, the actual death rate is now extremely low. And you know, Neil, a lot of the things I've said have kind of been shocking. But I'm going to put this prediction down, is that you're going to see less than 20,000 deaths to 30,000 deaths from COVID by January 1st. The number of cases, as people really got tired, Neil, those people are going to be burned out and tired. People are tired wearing their masks.
Yeah.
But the actual number of deaths is going to be very low. And most of those deaths are going to be associated with people that are 80 years old and have other morbidities.
See, so I think that once this election's over, there's nothing political until 2 more years, that everyone will wake up and say, we can't allow this because we're not going to be reelected in 2 years. So at this point right now, everything is set up to make it like a political reason, this health tragedy. And now it's going to be a daily thing for us. We'll probably be wearing masks a lot. We'll probably be practicing social distancing, but more and more it'll be less and less, I guess, followed. And then they're going to find out that, hey, we overblown this, but we won't know until after the election. Once the election has been set, because politically, if you did not fault President Trump on the virus, there's no case for President Trump to lose. So if anything, if you're an opponent, you're going to bring up the amount of deaths. So here's a question for you, Dr. Stephen. I'll go a CNN question. Because again, I'm going to always be non-opinionated at all. I'm just giving you my overall outlook of what's happening. If you look at specifically enough, the death rate in the United States versus the world, why are we still not very good with our death rate? You know, President Trump will deny it, but numbers show that our death rate in the United States is still poor compared to other countries, and it's rising in hospitalizations compared to other countries.
I think part of the reason is you have to look at the population. One of the things we try to do in the United States is keep even the sickest of people alive. That means in the U.S. we do dialysis. We put people in nursing homes. You'll even take people from a nursing home and you'll put them in ICU sometimes when they're almost a do not resuscitate. So a lot of the deaths that came about were related, especially in that first wave, to people at the end of their life, which is why the death rate was, the average age of death was 80. So those were very sick people. The other thing that you have to look at is intestinal health is part of your immune system. We have a habit in the U.S. of overeating.
Right.
And if we overeat, especially in proteins, we are more likely to have a worse outcome. If you look at the White House, for instance, we're just, let's imagine we're all just lay people looking at the White House. The skinny women, the skinny men, all did pretty well when they got infected. There were, what, 30 cases up there at the White House?
Something like
Chris
that.
Chris Christie didn't do so well. So we have to look at digestive health and how we digest our food and process it. And that is one of the big arguments for using Pepcid, is that Pepcid would actually help your immune system pass that virus onto your small intestines. And so Pepcid is a great idea. And it is something that if, yeah, I mean, Trump used it. And so, I mean, Pepcid is something that, look at vitamin D. Vitamin D works. And, but vitamin D is also related, your vitamin D levels are related to how healthy your intestines are. So, as a country as a whole, I think we tend to overeat as a society. And unfortunately, you know, that's not real good for people.
So, Mark, you mentioned a minute ago that dexamethasone would be good as an anti-inflammatory. Dexamethasone is a steroid and has been suggested as something that you can use in COVID therapy. But is it necessary for most of the patients? I don't think so, especially if you have other...
Yes. And in fact, I see people... Dexamethasone or Decadron was used by Trump. What you'll see in a lot of mild cases where people have the COVID fatigue, I will see people with COVID fatigue that have had an infection. And a lot of times these are younger people that are, they don't need hospitalization. They might be in their mid-30s or 40s. And when they use Decadron and that actually appears to help them on their recovery phase. They'll feel better a lot of times within 24 hours.
So, Mark, define fatigue in this setup. Does that mean you have COVID but you can't get over it?
In a way, when your body recognizes that you have COVID in your system, if your body recognizes it as an invader, then it wants to get rid of it. And part of your immune response is to try to save energy so that you'll be able to have more energy to fight the infection. So you get real tired often as part of one of the things that can happen is you can test positive for the antigen for days or weeks, and you can't clear all that antigen out of your chest sometimes, and your body will still think that the infection's going on, even if you can't clear it all out. So you stay tired.
Mark has inoculated himself with live COVID by swallowing it or taking it in a capsule. And he says that the best thing to do is if you're in a family and one of the members of the family is positive for COVID, that you eat after them and share food or put some of their saliva in a capsule and swallow it while you're taking Pepcid. And this is going to allow the virus to get into your intestine where it can develop an infection and you get immunity. But with the infection, about all you see in terms of what's happening to you is one or two loose stools, not anything like if you got infected in your chest. And you have immunity at that point. And he has proven this in himself and some patients that he has had. And so the other thing is, what if you don't have a family member that's positive? Well, on advice of your physician, you could get some of their saliva and swallow it. But you don't want to swallow saliva from somebody that has another virus like herpes, for example, or has sores in their mouth or is sick somehow. So I'm not recommending that. I'm just telling you that some people have done that, and some people have gotten immunity to the SARS in the lungs, and they haven't had any symptoms. So go back and listen to what Mark has to say in a previous podcast on immunity.